So this is going to be a really fun episode, a little different than what we normally do here on Dunked On. I actually met this guy just sitting in the stands watching a game at Vegas Summer League. Went to college at Duquesne. He's been playing for CSKA Moscow for the last like 4 or 5 years now. He'll be playing in China this year with the Beijing Ducks, actually taking Stephon Marbury's place. But he follows NBA basketball religiously, also has a ton of experience overseas, and just a very frank, funny, interesting guy. And I think you'll really enjoy the show. Quick disclaimer, though, might be a little bit more language on this show than normal because we kind of just let it go a little bit. So if you got the kids around, might want to earmuff them. But I think everyone will really enjoy this one. Then we're going to have Danny on talk about the Clippers, Lakers, and Memphis Grizzlies Summer League prospects as well. Try to make a little more progress on that. Here we go with Aaron Jackson. All right, it was a fortuitous coincidence that we met. Do you remember who we were talking about or who you were talking about when I just interjected into your conversation? Yes. In very, very nice fashion.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. I swear, just like 2 days ago or yesterday, I looked at a tweet and it said James Cooley got signed to a two-way contract for which team was it? But we were talking about him.
Kings.
I think I was crushing him too. I was like saying that he can't even move. And you turned around and said, I heard he's the best player in one of his situations in Europe. And I played against him a few times. And good for him. He got signed. He got signed for a two-way contract with the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you said, nah, he ain't the best player in the German league.
Nah, he wasn't. He definitely wasn't the best player in the German league.
Who is the best player in the German league? Are you that up on the German league?
Yes, I am. I think the kid that just got signed by New Orleans, Miller.
Oh, Darius Miller. Oh, yeah, yeah. Miller, I want to ask you about him because like he took a couple years off. Like, you think he's gonna be good?
Yep, I think he's gonna be real good. He's a mismatch. In Europe, he's a mismatch. I don't know how he would be in the NBA, but before that, he played with Brad Wanamaker, which was the best player in Germany for like the past 2 years. And once Brad left, he took over and he became the best player in Germany. Not Cooley. So, but I think he'd be good in the NBA too, because he can shoot the ball. And I think if you can shoot the ball and you can spread, be a spread man, you can be very effective in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, because he can't jump at all, right? But he's got like a strong body, like, and if he could shoot, like, that's a player.
And he's very motor. He got a motor. So, you know, what, like those players in the NBA that got a motor, like Mikero and all the other Crowders that doesn't stop, and then also can shoot the ball. They can find a spot in the NBA.
Yeah, because I was surprised that he got, because they gave him more than the minimum, and I was surprised to see that. Like, I guess he had a lot of people like actually competing for his services. He hadn't really been on my radar since he left.
Ah, really? He got over the minimum. I thought it was minimum. I'm not sure, but he was in the NBA before, so the minimum is definitely good for him. But I know there's teams in Europe that was willing to give him more than he got after taxes. Obviously, my former team in CSKA wanted him. Barcelona wanted him. He was definitely a big bid on the free agents list. And you know, more good things to him that he went to the NBA. I know he was excited about that.
All right, so I wanted to get your take on this Kyrie Irving thing, because it's something that, for me, what I said on my show and we talked about it the other day was, my conclusion is, I mean, you could say a lot of things about this, but like, if winning championships is his goal, like, you can't really see him make this request and conclude that like winning a championship is the most important thing to him. But like, do you agree with that? Like, or is it just something else that's more important to him at this point, you think?
It's the brand. I know people that know Kyrie. It's definitely his brand. He doesn't want to stay second fiddle between LeBron James. And sometimes I watch games in the playoffs and I see Tyronn Lue takes him out a couple times, and you can just look in Kyrie's eyes. He's not with that.
Oh, dude, I saw that actually. Yeah. There was one time, like, because you know he was going up against Klay like all finals, and there was one time in Game 5 where he started killing McCaw, and then Lue took him out, and he looked back at him. You remember that?
Exactly, I remember that. He subbed him out, but it's a thing that Tyronn Lue always does. He takes him out in the last like 3 minutes of the first quarter, second quarter. Yeah. He let LeBron's play, and Kyrie, you could tell he didn't like that shit. And you know, and then not on top of that, he's getting second fiddle and his brand. You know, he wants his brand to get better. He wants to be bigger. He wants to be global. He see Stephen Curry getting potentially $46 million a year, and his brand is building. So I think that kind of hurt the NBA now. Players want their brand. Social media is ruling. So he's like, you know what? I want to trade. It's definitely not for championships, because the best way to win a championship is staying with LeBron.
Well, so, I mean, what did you think when you first heard it? Like, is there anything that came to mind beyond that? Was this a surprise to you, or did you actually kind of see it coming a little bit?
From talking to my agents and some of my friends, it was actually a surprise. You know, we felt like LeBron would leave and Kyrie would have his chance again to be his team. But I think maybe, who knows? There's so many conspiracies going on. Maybe Kyrie's just he's just going and waiting for LeBron to leave, so he's gonna go to the Knicks and then LeBron goes to the Knicks. Who knows? They could just be playing the game. But you know, when you're a competitor and you want to play and you want to win championships, of course, this is a big surprise. But who knows what Kyrie's thinking? He definitely betting on himself.
Well, I'm sure it was kind of similar for you in Europe, right? Like, you're playing on one of the best teams in Europe. I mean, I will admit I hadn't followed your career that closely until we just like happened to meet in the stands in Las Vegas. Yeah. But like, you could obviously have gone to a smaller team and had a much larger role, maybe not got paid as much, I guess, as well. But like, you're playing less than 20 minutes a game last year, right? So
exactly. I'm a competitor too. Like, there's been times where I've been on Cheska playing behind Milos Teodosic. That just got picked up by the Clippers. He's probably the best point guard in Europe, and I think he is like top three pick and roll point guards in the world. And when I was playing by him, this time I thought, you know what, I want to go somewhere else. Fuck this. I don't want to do this. I want to go build my brand. I want to be a competitor. I want to lead my team. But you know, playing 5 years there and winning the championship and making good money, of course, you don't always want to take what the grass is greener. And I hope Kyrie understands what he's doing. But like I said, I've been in his shoes, just being a competitor.
How good is Kyrie?
I watch Kyrie highlights literally every day. I'm in Europe literally every day.
That doesn't make you like the best basketball player, though, right?
I agree. I was gonna also say that he doesn't make anyone around him better. So he's not a role. He's a player that, you know what, I'm a 1B, because he's definitely a 1, but he has to be a 1B. LeBron's the 1A, he's the 1B, and he could be the wild card that can close out the game. But him taking on his own team, we've seen him done that before. They never make the playoffs. Yes, they had bad players, but still, he even get them close. He got coaches fired. But once it comes to all he needs someone to get him there, and I think he'll finish it. And other than that, he's a hell of a player. He's my favorite player besides Russell Westbrook, I think.
Yeah, just to watch me. Well, so do you think he could get better? Like, is that something like at setting guys up? Because, I mean, you know, we know what the record is when LeBron doesn't play. Like, when LeBron is off the floor, mm-hmm. their numbers are really bad.
It's real bad. And the ball doesn't move. But I've seen Kyrie actually have 11 assists one playoff game. And he was literally making the passes that a point guard should make. And then he had like 28. And it wasn't even assist passes. Some passes were like hockey assists.
That's what it is, right? That's what people don't understand is like, you say like, oh, like this dude's averaging X number of assists, but it's like you held the ball until you could throw it to someone who was wide open, right? Like, you have to like actually empower your teammates to make the play sometimes.
Exactly. And I've seen him hold the ball and make the assist pass. And like I said, when I saw him score 28 and 11, he was making the short roll pass to Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson was kicking out the Clay Culver. And so you don't want to say Kyrie can't pass, but it's just something that he's not his favorite to do, unless it's assist. And I think that's something that he needs to get better on. And he's still young. He's still gonna be one of the best point guards in the league. He just needed to get that in his game, and then he can really be 1A and not 1B.
Yeah, well, I guess there's also, like, you know, that other end of the court that he has to deal with.
The defense, but right now in the NBA, obviously, I think the defense is, for point guards and two guards, is the most overrated position. You don't need those guys to play defense. You need the 3 to 4 and 5, so when they switch, to play defense. The 1 and 2 defense is overrated in the NBA.
Yeah, I guess that's true,
unless you're Avery Bradley.
Yeah. Well, it depends, like, what type of defense you're playing to. I think, like, if you have, like, an immobile center who like just has to hang, like if he's gonna drop, then I think you need guys who could like actually fight over a screen
and
play. Like, I mean, but it's like, it's not about like, oh, I'm gonna just stop you in an ISO, because like that's, you know, because it's all like pick and roll. But like if you're just gonna switch, then yeah, it's not that bad. But he like, he needs to like fight when he's on a switch too. Like if he gets like down in the post against someone, like he just like gives up every time.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, I'm like the same. I think I give up too if I see if I'm switching on DeAndre Jordan.
I will get right back to Aaron Jackson momentarily after this word from our supporters at Movement Watches, MVMT.com/capspace. Take out all the vowels. MVMT.com/capspace is the way to get started with them and get 15% off for watches that already are far more economical than what you get at a department store. They start at just $95. At a department store, you're looking at $400 to $500. I really love their 40 series. I prefer a little smaller watch. 40 stands for 40 millimeters. It's a great gift idea, especially if, because a lot of people don't wear watches anymore now. They just have their cell phones. But having a great watch is an awesome accessory. You could actually even buy more than one because they are more economical than other ways to buy watches to match different outfits. If you go to that MVMT.com/capspace URL, you'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see the quality, the style that these watches have. They've now sold over a million watches in 160 countries. So if you're an international listener, great way to support the pod because they do ship internationally. And it'll be even better of a deal if you use that slash capspace URL, MVMT.com/capspace. Join the movement. So for people who haven't seen you play, like, what's your game like? Give me like the 30-second like summary of like what your game is like.
30-second summary of my game. I've been through a lot of phases in Europe. My first three years, it was, you know, playmaker, score, you know, just scoring whatever it takes to help the team win and being that guy. And then the last 5 years in Cesca, I became a guy that pretty much did everything that helped help the team win. I was a team first oriented player. Not a Bruce Bowen in this extent, but I was a good role player that was definitely a factor in being successful in Cesca.
Yeah, well, so you're playing now with the Beijing Ducks. Are you actually replacing Stephon Marbury?
Yeah. This is I got a call from an agent there, and then the coach called me, and then the owner of the team called me, and they told me that they missed the playoffs the last 2 years, but fortunately they won big things at Marbury, but they lost the last two playoff spots, and they said, we're gonna make a change, we're gonna replace a legend, and we want you to be the guy to do it. And that's what I'm excited for more than anything. Is something to get back on to playing the type of basketball where everyone wants me to be that guy again.
Yeah, because I guess like pretty much any American in China, it's like, do they just like expect you to shoot every time? I mean, that's the stereotype. Is that actually true?
Yeah, but you know, I talked to the coach about that kind of, because he's a Greek coach. He's coached in Europe. He coached in Germany. I'm like, first thing I said was like, you know, you're calling a player that plays in Europe for 8 years, and that's a Europe mentality. I'm not a guy that's going to go out there and score 40 points. I'm not going to do it like a Marshawn Brooks or those guys that just gets 40 points, and you know, or Russ Smith that gets 60 points. I'm not the type of guy. I'm gonna make the right pass, and when it's time for me to take over, I'm going to do that. He was like, Aaron, I'm trying to change the brand of Chinese basketball. We're going to try to win it like a team sport. We're going to try to win it a team sport, and I think that's the and we're going to change the league, and I think you're the first player to do it. So I'm excited about that too.
Oh, yeah. Who are you going to be playing with there?
Justin Hamilton. You know, he just played for Toronto. And he played in Europe. I see him playing in Europe a couple times too. So he's gonna be the big man in Europe with me. We already talked. Having said that, I'm gonna be a role player and try to make the right play, but I'm excited to play against any American that's gonna be there. I'm gonna try to go out the head and just that show that I can also be an elite player at any level.
Would you rather play with like a stretch five like him where there's more space, or would you rather have like the DeAndre Jordan type, like elite role guy, like go get an oop, but like can't shoot?
Bro, I'm the worst player to throw alley-oops. I can't throw them. I can't throw an alley-oop to save my life. There's been so many times where I throw an alley-oop to my players and they're just like a little bit higher or a little bit left, and then I do it and then it's all the way right or it's all the way low. So definitely playing with Justin Hamilton is going to benefit, because I like to attack the basket. I don't like the big rolling and getting in my way. So when he when he pops, he's gonna spread the court, and I always make the right pass. So, or I make the right decision in finishing, or making the right pass. So I'm excited about that.
So one of the things we talked about a lot was just this offseason, because you watch a ton of basketball, you follow the mm-hmm. business aspect really closely. Yeah. Who was like a contract that you thought like someone who should have got paid more this offseason that you think is really good, like kind of underrated?
Ah, man, there's a few players I think that got undervalued in the contract, but like you said, the money ran quick. It's definitely my starting point guard I played with, Chesca, Milos Teodosis.
I thought he was gonna get more. Yeah,
me too. He played the game wrong. I know some inside things where he didn't, you know, the NBA, a lot of GMs didn't really understand his character because they heard so many rumors, and there's so many rumors yeah. about him. And before I played in Chesca, I heard so many rumors about him. And then once you get to meet him and be around him and see what type of player he is, you're like, all right, it's not true. Like, he's a real good dude. Okay, he has his issues on the basketball court, but the issues that people say about him personally is not true. And his agent didn't do a good job of bringing him to America. He let him stay in Europe, and he didn't let him meet teams face to face. And it kind of scared GMs where to pay him or give him type of money like that. But he definitely should have got 3 years, $24 million, between 24 and 30, I thought.
Well, a lot of people got fucked on the point guard market this year too, yeah. because this draft had so many point guards in it, right? I mean, like all these yeah. teams, and then Russell got traded to Brooklyn. That was supposed to be a team that was going to get a point guard. Philly moved yeah. up. They drafted Fultz, so that was one that was lost. So there really weren't that many landing spots of places that were looking for starting point guards, especially when you had like some pretty established guys in the NBA who might have been ahead of him. So I mean, like, I understand why, just based on the money that was left, he ended up getting what he did.
But he definitely he had a 3 year, I think, between $24 and $30 million contract with Chicago. It was literally hours away before he signed. It was 97% chance he was going there. And then the whole Jimmy Butler trade happened. And if he would have stayed 100%, he'd have been Chicago three years, $30 million. Yeah, I talked to him about that. He was really tight about that because he really wanted to go there. But, you know, the Bulls finally, I'm a Bulls fan. Paxson and them did a good job of saying, you know what, let's start over and let's start over and then try to rebuild with the young and keep our salary cap, because, you know, Jimmy Butler was going to ask for, I want to say $30 million a year pretty soon.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. I mean, because that's like that designated player mm-hmm. extension where if he qualifies, it's like, you know, do we want to pay him? He would have been 29, five-year mm-hmm. deal. That's like a little, all right, well, so you're a Bulls fan? Like, I'm sorry, I grew up in Chicago actually, was there during the Jordan years. Is that your, how did you become a Bulls fan?
I became a Bulls fan because my brother kind of liked the Lakers, and I wanted to root against him. And one of my best friends was a Knicks fan, and I was young, I was like 8, and he always talked about the Knicks, and I said, you know what, Patrick Ewing, Michael Jordan, I go with Michael Jordan. He loved Patrick Ewing. He was a big man, I was a guard, so, you know, I became a Bulls fan at the age of 8, and I've just been liking him ever since.
Dude, I actually turned in my fan card like about 3 years ago. I think like the last year that I actually like kind of rooted for them to win games was 2014-15. I think after that, I've been like, I mean, part of it is just because like I follow the league so closely, it's just like you can't really root for teams anymore. But yeah. like they've been kind of fucking up, to be honest. They, like lately, didn't. Like I've like lost, because I used to defend them a lot, and really yeah. since like they fired Tibbs, they haven't done anything right. I haven't liked any of their moves.
It's definitely the management. The manager, they just making bad moves. I do like the move of Jimmy Butler. I think he's an excellent player, but I think it's time for us to get a new identity.
Do you thought they got enough for him though? Like you like Dunn?
I'm Dunn's from Connecticut, so I'm gonna go with him, but I don't think he's gonna be the guard that's gonna save them. No, but yeah. I like Zach LaVine. I like being young. I like the yeah. kid they drafted too.
Yeah, Markkanen. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, because all right, now I know what your bias is. You love stretch fives. All
right, I love stretch fives. Right,
every stretch five, you're gonna be like it.
get Ty Gibson out of there. Get him out of there. I'll take a stretch five or stretch four any day.
Well, all right, though, we were sitting there in the stands though watching Dennis Smith. Like, you can't tell me that like they shouldn't have drafted Smith.
I thought Dennis Smith was I thought he top three pick.
That's why I had him too.
I still watch him now. He still has a hard time of finding the right pass, and sometimes he's double teamed, sometimes he draws two defenders on him, and he still makes a spin move with his, and turns his back. back instead of getting rid of the ball. But like, he's young, he's a rookie, and hopefully he's going to learn. And he's going to be able to learn because Mark Cuban or Rick Carlisle said he's starting right away, didn't he?
Yeah, he did say that. I mean, we'll see whether that actually comes true or not. I'm sure like at some point Carlisle is going to bench him for some shit. Yeah. Like, I don't know what it's going to be, but
Rick Carlisle is an excellent coach. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I think for Smith, if you look at the type of guys who come in the league, like with his athleticism at that age, if you look back like Rose or Westbrook or John Wall, like he, I think, is a better shooter than any of those guys. And probably Wall is a better passer than him, but I think he's a better passer than like Rose or Westbrook were coming in. So it's like, I'm surprised at like his skill level, because most of those athletic dudes, like they've just been relying on their athleticism the whole time.
Exactly. Yeah, he's still, and Westbrook is still an overrated passer. It's a lot to the assist man and everything. He dominates the ball so much. But Smithy, I think he's going to learn real well. And I'm rooting for him. I want to see him show up the teams that pass him, like the Knicks, because I don't know what the Knicks are doing. But we'll see.
Have you seen Neil Aquino at all?
No, I've seen him a couple times, not in person, and just a couple highlights. I never really got to see him play like live or anything like that. But everyone told me he's real good and is gonna be good.
Yeah, my comparison for him is like George Hill. I think that's like what he's gonna kind of like long, like not like a great finisher, but like competes on defense. Good spot up shooter, like that was kind of what I think. I mean, maybe he could grow beyond that, but like that's I think that's kind of.
But who's the comparison for Smith? Who's the comparison to Smith then? George Hill is pretty good.
I mean, that's the top. I mean, he's in the same category as like some of the guys I was just talking about, like Westbrook and Rose, those guys. But I mean, I think he's, my worry about him is that he's just going to get injured again. Like that's my fear.
Yeah,
like with the way he plays and like just trying to go in and like dunk on everybody and stuff. Like he's just going to like get knocked down one day and like not get up. Like,
exactly. But I love the chip on his shoulder. He's I saw an interview after they said he'd been picked like 9 and being passed on. His answer was perfect, and talk about like, man, I'm just happy to be here, and I'm gonna let my work for itself. So he's one of those kids that know exactly what to do to be successful in the NBA, I think.
Yeah, it is hard to find a comparison for him. All right, so another thing I want to ask you about is, who are the players in Europe that you think would be like really well? All right, I'll ask you two questions. First off, who are like the 3-4 best players in Europe right now in your mind, like for actually winning games in Europe?
That, and for the players that left, right?
Milos.
I don't. They're in the NBA now, so I'm going to give it to Spanoulis. He used to play for the Rockets. He plays in Greece now. You know Spanoulis.
He didn't play very much for the Rockets, but yeah, he was on the team.
Can I tell you a story about? I tell you a story about him. Jeff Van Gundy was told him, "Listen here. We got, you're in the game. This is your job. Get the ball to T-Mac and go in the corner." Right. And he literally told Jeff Van Gundy, "But I'm the T-Mac in Europe. I'm the T-Mac in Europe. I don't go to the ball. I don't go to the corner." This is exact words to him. And he ended up going back to Europe, and he definitely is the T-Mac of Europe. He might be, in fairness, he's not better than T-Mac, but he's a better, if you would say he's better than T-Mac of Europe. He's one of the best players in Europe of all time. He has like 5 championships, hit numerous game winning shots. He crushed my Final Four chances like 4 times. I've seen him do it. But like I said, and then the other is Nando DeColo.
Yeah.
Sure, you know.
Well, so you had to guard Spanoulis a lot, right?
Yes.
In those matchups?
Yes, I had to guard Spanoulis plenty of times.
You would pay more attention to this shit than I do. But like the first time I saw this play was they used it with him because he like would like to like get off the ball and then like sprint up the lane to the top of the key and get like a
handoff.
So how do you guard that? Because that's like, I mean, especially if the guy could shoot, which he's not like a great shooter, but like no matter where he gets the ball, like you're going to be behind him and then he can attack, you're going to be out of position,
it's over. He can shoot it or he can get the handoff and go either way. So it's the point guard's bringing the ball up, and then he throws it to the 5-man, then the 4-man sets a pin down for you, and this is Spanoulis underneath the basket, so you go left, you go right in the handoff, and he gets it, and then you either as a defender you have to go under it, and if you go under and he's filling it, he's gonna shoot it, because if you go over it, the big man's in a hedge, he's just gonna throw it right to the diver because there's no weak side, and it's a dunk. So everyone calls it the Spanoulis play, because I think they started that like 7 years ago, and he's been doing it ever since. He's probably the best player that he kills. There's nothing I can do about it. I tell you that. I tried everything, so I just get to the point where I just try to get him his foul trouble and get him out of the game. That was the best defense against that play.
Yeah, I saw the Jazz actually running a lot of that this year. Like they would run it with Hayward a lot, lot, and they would run to the wing sometimes too. But I mean, that's a really difficult play to deal with. That's funny that's I guess I was like one of the first times that they ran it, because he like what makes it so hard is because he just like sprints up there on like sprints, a dead run,
full,
like, just like
full speed.
So there's gonna be like separation between you, like exactly. when he gets it, and it's just like, all right, if you go over, then he's just gonna go right to the rim.
Exactly. It's either you gotta pick your poison, just hope you can't shoot it. I think Quinn, the head coach of Quinn Snyder, the head coach of Utah, when he was coaching us and Cheska, we lost to Spanoulis and Olympiacos in the Final Four, and I swear they must have ran that play like 10 times, and I'm sure that's why Quinn and the Utah Jazz run that right now in the NBA.
Yeah, all right, so Nando DiCola was the other guy you were gonna say.
And yeah, Nando DiCola, this dude, he's ice in his veins, an MVP in Europe last season, or year before last, and MVP twice in the VTB. He's an unbelievable scorer and a game finisher. The other Houston Rocket drafted Sergio Yule from Madrid, which he doesn't want to go to the NBA. I don't blame him. He lives in Madrid. He's from Spain. He's literally the king in Madrid. How you see Cristiano Ronaldo, he is second behind him. He lives like a rock star in Spain. Yes, and gets a nice paycheck and everything. So he's loving it.
Well, so what's for especially guys who are European? I mean, I think for Americans, it's like, you know, it's easier for you to go to come back. Like Epiudu is coming back for like, you know, what is he getting paid? Like $3 million or something from the Jazz this year. Like he could have made more in Europe, right?
Yeah, for sure. I heard his second year isn't guaranteed either.
Yeah.
That's what I read. Second year not guaranteed either. I'm sure he's paying a buyout, so he's probably going to pocket after taxes and everything. He's probably going to make $1 million. I don't want to count the man's money, but he definitely would have walked away with $3 million and been the best player in Europe and Fenerbahce, and probably would have won another championship. But I saw him in the nightclub in Miami like a couple weeks ago, and he was like, bro, I'm doing whatever it takes not to go back to Europe. He's just tired of the practices and the hard work. It's real demanding. A lot of people don't understand how demanding it is, so I'm happy for him that he went to Utah. I think he's an NBA player. There's no reason for him to be in Europe.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but how much is it really? So if you're like one of these guys, like DiCola, Udo's a little different because he's American, or Teo. Like, how much does it really take to like make it financially worthwhile for you to come to the NBA?
Honestly, I thought it takes a lot, especially with this new EuroLeague. It's just so much competition. It's so fun. It's you're the man in your city. You know, guys like Yule and Milos and Nando, they can't even walk around certain places in Europe, and they're gonna go to the NBA and have a significant decrease in their role. But when you get the money that you get off the court, and you know Nando had an Adidas a contract that he could have got that he couldn't get for playing for Cheska, and Cheska actually told him that he's gonna get it, and he signed to Cheska, he couldn't get it, so he probably lost a lot of money there. And Teo signed with Peak, and he got a nice contract there, and then he got the contract for the Clippers. I think that money right there and the less practices and demanding on your body, it made it real easy for him to make that decision.
So you think actually NBA is less demanding on your body than Europe is?
Oh my God, 110%. There's no such thing as 110, but 100%. The NBA is way easier than Europe, especially in the EuroLeague level. It's I had Kirilenko. I had a ton of NBA players on my team. You know, Nene Kristaps, Kirilenko. Who else? I had several NBA players, Sasha Khan, Victor Karaper, that just said that I had Corey Higgins on my team. He was in the NBA. They just look at NBA as like the way they treat your body and players first. And when in Europe, you have a game in Kazan, Russia, and then you got to fly all the way to Madrid on a plane that's not your own plane. And then you got to practice in the morning with tape and then get ready for the game at night. It's just too demanding on your body, where in the NBA, you don't practice as much, and they take care of your body and they have ice baths and so much recovery that Europe is lacking right now.
Yeah, so it's really like the practices they get you.
Oh my God, practice. So you have a game, Monday's your day off. You practice twice on Tuesday. You practice on Wednesday tape. You practice Thursday tape. You play a EuroLeague game Friday. So you only play 32 games in EuroLeague. So every game is like a final to get your seating. So you're playing as hard as possible Friday. Saturday, you travel to whatever back to your country and play your domestic game on Sunday. And you got a shoot around Sunday morning. And it's like a practice. You got tape and everything. They go in going over drills, and then you play again Sunday, and then the day off is Monday. So you have probably one day off. You probably have 3 days off during the month, and then the rest is just tape practices or games. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. What if you're actually like playing, you know, 35 minutes a game, 82 games? Like, do you think that changes it at all? Or do you think it's still harder?
Nah, it's still harder.
But
Milos had he had a good relationship with the coach, so he didn't practice much. But guys like Nando that played like 30 minutes, you know, he was practicing every day, and you could see just his body all bruised up. And I'm for sure if he had a buyout this year, he would have left and went to the NBA too. He got stuck and locked into a contract. You know, it's just so demanding.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, it's because I think like the popular perception would be, oh, it's easier in Europe, you're not playing as many games. But
and it is like, and it's competitive in practice. You know, they got those old Yugoslavian coaches or coaches that have been taught by Serbian coaches, and they just all right, one-on-one drills, back behind your back, back behind your hand, sliding, stuff like that. Like, you're in high school or college. It's like playing college. It's like great players in college. That's why I say Europe is.
Well, so a lot of people, like, there's always this thought, like, all right, if you're an American, you don't get drafted, whatever, you go overseas, you're making, like, you know, $300-400K immediately. But, like, some Americans just, like, can't handle it in Europe, huh?
Yeah, it's tough. You could get in a situation where you're in a tough city, or you have a tough coach who just practice a lot, and you get homesick, and you can get late in payments. Some payments can be a month or two late. It can really be daunting on a player. You know what I mean? Especially a young player. I remember when I first got to Turkey, Antalya. I lived in a hotel for 7 months, and I was 3 months late with my paycheck. Some days I wouldn't have it. I wouldn't have Wi-Fi, and I was just miserable. I called my agent every day and said, you know what, man? Let's just leave and go to the D League, and I'm ready to take that route instead of playing this route. But luckily, he talked me into staying. But it's tough. It will test you mentally.
Why did you stay?
You know, my agent just beat it in my head, like, Aaron, if you leave, you're gonna get that label where you left, and no big club is gonna take you serious. Because I've seen the big teams while I was playing with the small team. I've seen the Fenerbahce's, the Real Madrid's, and I either felt like, all right, if I'm going to NBA, I want to play here. So I thought, like, if I left, I would lose that opportunity. Some kids don't see that. It's just like, you know what, man, fuck this, man. I'd rather be with my family, or I'd rather be home, or this team doesn't understand. Like, me being here, I'm away from my family for 10 months, and I get my check 2 months later. They're like, man, put me in that first plane home, and then they leave. And it puts them in a situation where they can never, it's hard to bounce back in Europe.
Yeah, because no matter who you are, really, if you're someone out of college, like, they're not, one of those big teams is not going to just, like, pick you up. No. Like, you have to, like, prove exactly what you're saying, that you're not one of these people who's just going to flake out and want to go back.
Exactly. It's very rare that you see a first-time player on a big team, on one of the top six teams in Europe. You don't see that. They watch you, and they check everything out. And if they see something they don't like, they really X you out. Europe is really, it's really tough like that. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. But luckily, I did the right way, and I had a great career. Still having a great career.
So I am back from Vegas now, and I've really been looking forward to finding some time to cook some great home-cooked meals with my girlfriend with Blue Apron. Some of the meals available in July that I'm looking forward to: seared chicken and creamy pasta salad with summer squash and sweet peppers, fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn and cubanelle pepper, anything with basil in it I am a sucker for, chili butter steaks with parmesan potatoes and spinach. Blue Apron is a food delivery service, if you're not familiar with them, that for less than $10 a meal delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. It's totally flexible. You can customize your recipes each week, and you can choose a delivery option that fits your needs. We get it once a week. We actually do meals for four for just the two of us, so we have some leftovers that we can eat the next day. Really enjoy doing that. The way to get started with them, check out this week's menu. Again, this is one of those ones, if you just go there, take a look at what they have available. Some of the meals are quite mouthwatering. You can get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/capspace. That's /capspace URL. Of course, let them know that you came from us. And it's easy to remember because we talk about Capspace all the time on the program. That's blueapron.com/capspace. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Let's talk a little more NBA. All right, so you mentioned Teo. Like, who else did you think? I'll give you some names here, like people I thought, like, should have gotten more. Patrick Patterson is one for sure. I was really surprised that he only got like $5 million a year, basically.
He got $5 million a year, and he was in Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. I thought he would get paid more. That money dried up so quick, but if you look at the Oklahoma City roster, everything is plugged in to Adams and Cantor and Westbrook, and even Robeson got a big thing. And they signed Raymond Felton too, right? What was his contract? Did he get underpaid?
He just got the minimum.
He got the minimum?
Yeah. But he's 33. That's the same. I mean, last year in like that crazy market, he only got the minimum. So I wouldn't have expected him to get more than that.
Right. And what about Rondo? Rondo got underpaid. He's got underpaid his whole career. I've seen him play for the Bulls this year. I hated him until I seen him turn it on in the playoffs. And I thought that he was going to get a nice contract. And plus I don't like Rondo that much, but I think his whole career he's been underpaid. So I wanted to see him get a nice paycheck.
It's just, like, it's so hard to fit next to him though, right? Like he's because he has to have the ball in his hands, and he's not like that good of a scorer. And then if you have anyone else who can score who wants to have the ball in their hands, now he's like causing like spacing problems.
Exactly. So they probably did the right thing with giving him that much money, but I just wanted to see him get paid, overpaid finally, because I've seen so many other players get overpaid. So I'm like, why hasn't Rondo ever gotten? Joe Ingles, Ingles from Utah got overpaid. Why can't Rondo get overpaid once?
All right, so this is interesting actually. So I mean, I agree with you, that's probably too much for him. He's 29. Like he's gonna it'll be by the end it's gonna be difficult. But to me, like, he is the exact kind of player that like players like you always like underrate, and I think that you guys always overrate dudes like Jamal Crawford, because like when you're like, okay, no, I'm playing like great defense on this dude and he hit the shot anyway, that has like an outside effect like on players like trying to decide who's good. No.
I like Jamal Crawford. If I was a starter team, I would not take him. I'll take Ingles over Jamal Crawford, honestly.
Oh yeah,
I think a lot of the GMs
well you're not in the same boat as Doc Rivers, because Doc Rivers cut Joe Ingles.
Exactly. A lot of the GMs in the NBA are so, I'm not gonna say dumb, because they just don't understand basketball. They don't understand that a Joe Ingles or Patrick Beverly or someone like Milos Teodosic, how much of an impact can they make their team better? And you don't have the splash look or the look effect that Jamal Crawford has or Raymond Felton. Like, I honestly think, okay, I'm in a situation where, and this is not being biased to myself, if I got to pick between Raymond Felton and Aaron Jackson, I'm going to pick Aaron Jackson, because Aaron Jackson will do the little things that will make the team go. And GM's like, okay, Raymond Felton, he's been in the NBA for such and such amount of times, let him do this, or let him do this, because he's a journeyman. He knows what the NBA like. But you're going to get players like Joe Ingles. Like, if you go to Europe, like, look how much of an impact Joe Ingles is to Utah Jazz. He's a great player.
Yeah.
No, he's not worth that much money, but he's a real good player in that team. And so was Patrick Beverly. And NBA GMs just miss out on that all the time.
Yeah, someone who will move the ball like immediately.
Exactly.
When they get it. Like, okay, either make a quick decision.
Yes, and Joe Ingles does that all the time. He has George Hill, and he had Hayward on his team. You're not gonna sign the player that averaged 20 in Europe that needs a dribble all the time, blah blah blah. Like Andrew Goodlett needs a dribble all the time. You're gonna sign someone like Joe Ingles. He's gonna make the skip pass. He's tall enough to make the jump pass on the pick and roll, and he's gonna help. He's gonna help Hayward and Hill job much better, make their job easier. But a lot of NBA GMs don't see that.
Yeah, so some do. I mean, I think it's better than it was like 10 years ago for sure. I think people understand like the effect that shooting has. I mean, so it is interesting though. I mean, for example, like Sergio Rodriguez came over last year. Like, he was a little disappointing to me. Like, I'm sure you played against him.
Yeah.
A ton. Like, did you think he was going to be good last year?
I think he's an unbelievable pick and roll point guard, and the Sixers aren't a pick and roll team. They're scrappy one-on-one team that plays hard, that's going to cause mismatches, that's going to speed up the offense. Sergio Rodriguez is 100 times better pick and roll player than TJ McCollum, but TJ McCollum fits perfect for that offense, because he's going to move the ball. He's not going to need to pick and roll.
roll. And if you use the pick and roll, he's going to refuse the pick and roll and go the other way and kick it open, which plays fast ball. And you put Sergio Rodriguez on a pick and roll team. Let's say, who's a pick and roll team in the NBA? I'd say the Bulls, or you put him more, or he'd be the backup point guard with Westbrook.
Some more spacing. Yeah.
Yeah. He'd be the backup point guard Russell Westbrook. Sergio Rodriguez is going to have a hell of a year. And then Russell Westbrook is going to play the two a lot. But you don't do that, because the Sixers had no idea what they were going to do with their team. They just said, okay, he's a good player, so let's bring him. You know what I mean? And they gave him $8 million for it. And he didn't play as well as he's supposed to. And he went back to my former team, Cheska. And he's going to play pick and roll with them all day. And he's going to be a hell of a player.
Who else do we need? Is there anyone else we need to talk about, like, for potential, like, NBA guys? Oh, what about Bogdanović? Bogdanović. Yeah, how's he going to be? That's all right. You pause. That's all right. We could just move on. We know.
He's in a struggle in the NBA, I think. A struggle in the NBA. They paid him a lot of money, which is maybe a good sign, because they might give him the ball a lot because he needs the ball. But they have Fox. They have George Hill. They got Zach Randolph.
They got Healed as well.
He needs to be the man of the team. He needs to be the guy that gets the ball and come off the Spanoulas pick and roll and such like that. I thought that Sacramento adding so much pieces was the worst thing for him to go there, he's a good player, but a lot of people are going to say he's a bust or he's not good enough when he really is. It's just that he got drafted. Well, he got picked up into a tough situation with those type of players.
I always thought of him as more just like a spot up guy, like a come off a screens kind of guy. But it sounds like you're saying he could do more with the ball in his hands.
He's a pick and roll. He can play pick and roll. He can read the pass, but he's not a great pick and roll player. It's like the other Bogdanović for
He's on the Pacers now.
He's on the Pacers now, which I wish the Wizards would have kept him, because I wanted the Wizards to be good. But they both played for the same team. Both Bogdanović just played for the same team in Europe, Fenerbahce, and they both had a similar ways. And Bogdanović, if you watch him in his national team for Croatia, he pick and rolls the shit out of the ball. He's a real good pick and roll player, and he doesn't do that in the NBA.
How's his defense, Bogdanović?
Oh my God, he's a real good defender.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wow, okay. I haven't watched him except in the Olympics, really.
Yeah. But, when I remember when I first got to Cheska, my teammate Sonny Williams was having a damn near all-star. I mean, he was all EuroLeague for sure. I thought he was going to be the MVP. And I remember Bogdanović being, I want to say, 22 years old, a young player that didn't get the role he had now. And he was just a defensive player, because the coach is all about defense. When I mean Sonny Williams couldn't get by him, couldn't do anything, he was taking the ball from him, picking it, going down the court, dunking it. He's one of the best defenders in Europe. That's probably the underrated, people don't understand about him, which he would play good defense in the NBA too.
All right, that better be true, because I'm gonna start saying that he might actually be good. So this is my reputation.
he's a real good defender.
Yeah, I mean, what the stereotypes of, like, especially when it's someone who can shoot and they're white and like they're not like an incredible athlete. You're like, all right, how is this dude like a good defender?
Oh yeah, like Milos Teodosic and Sergio Rodriguez. They're awful defenders. Awful. Yes, but he's an exceptional defender.
Yeah. Well, so you're teams with Milos. Like, would he just admit that he's like not a good defender?
The first thing he texted me when he signed with the Clippers, he said, the first thing I said to Pat Beverly was, I'm glad I signed with you, because you're gonna play defense for the both of us. He's 100% serious. He's gonna let you know. Or if someone goes by him in the game and gets a layup and he jumps and misses, he goes, ah, Jack, I almost had it. One more inch, I would have had it. And stuff like that. In the middle of a game, he's saying this. Yeah, so he let you know that he's playing bad defense.
Who do you like? So when you're overseas, who do you really like? Think it does like a good job in NBA media? Like, who do you enjoy like reading or like podcasts or anything like that? Other than me, who you just found out about like a week ago? But
I know, right? I listen to Bermani Jones a lot. I listen to Ryan Russo. messing around Russillo and those guys a lot.
Russillo is good. I wish he would do more NBA stuff. He was on Zach Lowe's podcast like a couple days ago. So you're also an enormous Seinfeld fan, although I have to say I was appalled at your choice of a favorite episode, but you could tell the listeners what that is.
My favorite episode is the the werewolf episode when Jerry shaves his chest and he goes on a date with a girl and then the moon comes. He turns into a werewolf. Why are you appalled? Because Kramer steals a bus and acts like he's a tour guide. He takes random citizens on the tour of New York and just scare people. It's hilarious.
I mean, obviously all of them are good. Just two reasons I was appalled. One of them was it evoked an incident that I had in my youth, which we don't need to discuss any further on this podcast. But secondly, how is it not the contest? Like, you as a competitive person, like, you weren't like interested in seeing that. Like, that to me is like the obvious. That's the obvious one.
Hold on, with the contest, which one's this?
Who could like go the longest? Out the longest.
And they see the girl naked across the street, and Kramer walks out the door immediately.
Yeah, and then he returns. I timed it once. He returns in like, I think it was like 34 seconds, and like slams.
He slams the money on the table.
I'm out of the contest.
No, you seen the one when they can't when you don't have sex and you become smarter or you become the opposite of what you are and
that one is fucking fantastic.
That's hilarious. George becomes
absolute zero.
and then Lane becomes dumb. Oh, that's awesome. There's so many of them. I literally watch them every night. I go to sleep on them.
Yeah. No, I love Seinfeld for sure. That's why either that or like the early Simpsons is
Yeah, of course. I was just talking to one of my friends that like the Simpsons and Seinfeld and shows that you don't really have a substance about it. You can just make it timeless and just go forever with it.
Well, because like you know every line that's coming if you've watched them like a billion times. So it's like you could just kind of go to sleep to it or like zone out, do something else. It's like a happy, happy background soundtrack.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I do. I use
all right. This is a little more, abstract. So, like, a lot of fans will probably wonder, like, all right, these dudes are making hundreds of thousands of dollars in Europe, or millions of dollars, or they're making incredible amounts of money in the NBA. Like, how is it that like some basketball players like are unhappy? You know, what I mean, and like, I'm sure you've encountered like plenty of teammates at the time who were not happy. Like, how is it possible? I mean, because like I understand this, but I think a lot of fans like don't get like how you could be unhappy when like, you know, you're being paid money to play a game. Like, that's what you hear all the time.
It's them being a competitor. You know, you're in the NBA, right? Every NBA player has been the man or been somewhere they felt like they're the man in their stage before getting to the NBA. I mean, the LeBron James and the Chris, and not the Chris Pauls, but the Kevin Durant, they're happy. I don't want to say they're not happy. Okay, maybe they don't win a championship, they're not happy, but they're happy playing basketball, getting paid millions of dollars. Yeah. But, you know, the players, like, you can see DeAndre Griffin or DeAndre Jordan or Blake Griffin sometimes, even a Kyrie Irving that's not happy because they want to be that guy sometimes. And they know that they have a player better than them getting the shine, getting all the questions, getting all the love from social media, got Rihanna coming to the game. So them, they want that too. And they feel like if you're with a certain player or you're with a certain teammate, you can't get that. So that's why some people say you could not be happy. Trust me, that can make you not happy, especially if you're a competitor. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's kind of the human condition, right? Like if you have the shittiest house on the best block in Beverly Hills, you're going to be pissed off because everyone right around you has like a better house than you, or there's someone on your team who's making more money. I mean, and like for me too, like this is like a dream job for me to have. Like I lucked into this. Like I was a lawyer for a while. And yeah, you know, like there are definitely like journalists who make a lot more than me. I'm competitive. I like this podcast to do well. I try to like step back and remind myself like, hey, you know what? Like even if like my life never gets any better, like it's still awesome because like awesome. I'm happy. Exactly. But like it seems like it's hard for a lot of people in like any walk of life to do that.
It is. 100% it is. It's just, I think it's just human nature. You don't want to say competitive. It's just the human nature. And it's hard for us to sit back and think, okay, this dude's making millions of dollars and he's angry. You know what I mean? It's just It's just how it is. And I think fans shouldn't, or not fans, or people, spectators shouldn't think of it as like, all right, this guy's ungrateful, because I'm sure he's going to sleep or she's going to sleep at night. Thank you for the opportunity they have.
Well, so when you've had teammates, I'm sure you've had them on the various teams that you've played on, like who were unhappy, like what would usually be like a reason why? I mean, were they just like people who were just like that, or were they not playing enough, or like what were like the reasons why you would see them not be that happy?
I've been there before. Yeah. I've been there plenty of time. I played with, like I said, Teo, and he was in a situation where he never ever practiced because he had all the leverage. He knew he was going to go to the NBA, or Chess was going to give him $3.5 million a year to stay, and they wanted him because he was the best point guard in Europe, and he had said, you know, I don't want to practice today. He wouldn't practice. And I'm out there playing as hard as I can, practicing every day, doing all the right things, and I score 6 straight points, and then I get taken out for him, and then I don't see the court for another 12 straight minutes or 14 straight minutes until the second half. So it's just that can control, that controls a lot, because, you know, as some people just get things easier than you, and they look at it is a bad way. Other players look at it like, you know what, I'm a better defender than him, and he's getting more shots than me, and his man, okay, he scored 20 points, but his man scored 18 points, where I can score 12 points and my man will score 4. It's just that's just the game it is, and I don't even want to think about manager, because I know I wouldn't be able to manage it being a coach, so the coach has just as hard.
Well, so you have thoughts like that, right? So like, what's your internal dialogue? What do you say to yourself to like calm yourself down and like get back into like being like a productive teammate?
You know, my whole motto is just stay down, you know, stay down until it's time to come up. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to be professional, you're going to keep on working hard and you're going to do the right things. And okay, you can bitch about it personally. You can bitch about it to yourself in your head. As long as you don't become a distraction to your teammates or your team, at the end of the day, I think you're going to come up when the time is right. That your number's gonna get called, and if you stay in the right course, you better be ready to take full advantage of it.
So what if someone says to you, all right, so you're kind of feeling upset for whatever reason, and someone says to you, hey, you know what, like, we're paying you X amount of money, like, to play this role, like, we're not trying to hear you bitch right now. Like, is that persuasive to you, to if someone says that, or is that just like gonna piss you off more?
That's gonna piss me off more. Like,
yeah,
you're paying me X amount of dollars because you saw what I'm capable of doing, and I got here because what I did before. And if you say just shut up, I'm paying you money, I don't care about what you used to do anymore. It's just like, all right, then why even give me this money? You sign someone else that can do this. And no NBA, no GM, or no coach to say that to a player like that. Best thing is to say is, listen, it's tough to coach. You're gonna have your ups and downs, but don't act. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you you're never gonna have a chance, because you're always gonna have a chance, especially in sports and in life. Your opportunity's gonna come, and people that don't benefit opportunities, people that get distracted by it, or let the miss lap that they're in right now distract them all the way, and they miss the opportunity.
Because I think, like, you know, again, that's probably like what like a lot of uninformed fans will say, like, hey, you're getting paid this, like, you know, you need to be quiet and deal with it.
Kyrie is not happy. You know, yeah. What I mean, he's not happy. He's getting paid what? He got signed to a 5-year contract. He got picked up. It was a max at that time, an extension. But he's not happy there. He had the fastest selling shoe when LeBron James came. Before he had a shoe, and LeBron James came, and now it's the fastest selling shoe. He won a championship. He's traveling all across Europe and Asia promoting his shoe, and that's just not Kyrie. I mean, it's LeBron to do with it too, and he's not happy. So it takes. It's just not just the money and all the other things. You want to build your own empire, and he sees that he has a chance to do it. So that's what happens there.
Well, it's interesting too, because certain things are more important to certain people, right? Like, we've been held out as like, all right, the point of this sport is to win basketball games and to win championships, but it's also to like actually feed your family and be happy. And like, for some people, like, it doesn't surprise me that for some people, like, all right, I want to just be on like the most winning team, like David West. Like, what was your reaction when David West gave up like $12 million to go to San Antonio for the minimum?
He's crazy. I thought David West was crazy doing that.
But what if you already had $60 million, right? Like, does it really make a difference if you have like $60 and $70 million? Or, I mean, after taxes, it's half that. But, you know, like, is it really that much of a difference at the end of your career if you have another $5 million if you already made $50 million?
No, it's not a difference. He's played a lot. He's played on teams where he lost. He's played on teams where he got to the Eastern Conference Final. He probably got sick of that taste of losing. He was like, you know what? I want to win a championship. And he did it. And he went to the Spurs. He didn't do it, but he won with the Warriors, of course. But me personally, I'm not at that age where I'm willing to take a pay cut. I'm at the age where I need to get as much money as I can get. Well, thank God I won a EuroLeague championship. So I thought it was crazy. But at the end of the day, if you ask him right now, I guarantee David West would say it was worth it all because he played with a great team. That team's going to be remembered forever.
Yeah, like Jerry West, you know, he talks about like, I'm still haunted by like all these finals that I lost, you know, 50 years later or whatever. To the Celtics, but some people you don't buy that.
He has a championship, right?
They won one in 1972.
He's won one. He just signed a what ridiculous? How much did the Clippers give him?
They're giving him like, I think the reports were like $4 or $5 million a year. He's like 80 years old.
He's living a life. He won two championships with as being the president of the Warriors or GM, whatever it is. I'm sure he's haunted when he sees that 30 for 30 it was. That haunts him. But you win one, trust me, it's worth you. I won one. I lost four Final Fours, and that one overseeded all the losses I had. I can lose four more and then win another one. I just like, you know what, it's just worth it.
Yeah, that's good to hear, actually. Like, because I always wanted, like, cause for me, like, the reason I don't gamble is because, like, losing hurts me way more than winning, right? Like, I would rather, if I lose $100, yes. I'm like, this is way more pain than, like, the joy I get from winning $100.
Exactly. It's always like that. And I'm a gambler, and I could win $500, and I'll just be, you know, happy or whatever, and I'll just go ahead on my business. If I lose $500, I'm sick. I can't sleep. I'm thinking about it.
Well, you know, I mean, right? I don't know. Like, I've never had that mentality, but, like, I'm just like, why would I want to participate in a system that is designed to take my money? And then when it takes my money, I'm like, you fucking knew that if you did this, you're going to lose money. You're so stupid.
Hey, man, I'm going to go gamble. I'm going to go gamble in a couple of hours, actually. I'm going to tell you. After I saw you, I went to gamble. I was up 1,200, and then I put it all in my hand. I remember going to the next day. I went to go gamble again. I had like 3,300 in my hand. I went to gamble. I lost that in minutes in front of my friends, and they're just looking at me. And some kids are just looking at me. Some of my friends, not a situation I am, and they just look at me ready to throw up. They can't even watch it no more. I'm just losing disgustingly, like five hands in a row, seven hands in a row, and then I take more money out. And I lose again. I lose another 1,000. I take another 500 out. I was down 5,000, and literally I couldn't sleep. I was sick. We were all like, "Are we going out?" I went straight to the room. I didn't talk to anyone. And then the next night, I went to don't tell her.
Gambling is really fun. It's great.
Please do not gamble. It's gonna make you sick, especially losing. And you're never gonna ever win more than you lose. So it's not worth it.
Well, at least like championships, it sounds like, at least for you, like, don't work that way. Like, you at least get like more joy out winning than you get like pain losing.
You can tell me I'm gonna lose. You can tell me I'm gonna lose 2 years in a row in China and then win one more my third year. I'll take it. I'll take it.
Well, and at least you're getting there, right? Like, because if you're not getting there at all and you're just like, your season's done, you're not even making the playoffs. Like, that's
I'll take a pay cut for that. I'll take a pay cut to go to a better team for that. You know what I mean? I understand they're West or anyone that plays. So if I'm just Orlando Magic, I'm just collecting a check and I want to win. I want to play in June. If I made enough money, I'll take a pay cut for sure.
I like that team, Orlando Magic. They might be like the most hopeless team right now. As God, far as, like, when are they going to get back to like being good?
Oh man, I'm glad that we follow each other on Twitter now. If you see some of my tweets about Magic, I mean about Orlando Magic's GM and certain GMs, it's hilarious. I kill. I'm like, I tweet them. I at them sometimes. Like, what are you guys thinking? Magic. I don't know what the Magic are thinking.
Why have you not gotten an NBA job yet? By the way.
I don't know. I'm waiting. I'm gonna get an NBA job. Don't worry about it. It's just, I'm talking about like in the office. I was scared. I was scared about the Lakers job because I was real close to signing with the Lakers this summer.
Oh yeah.
And I thought about like just disabling my Twitter because there's been times where I just hammered Magic Johnson. I hammered
him. I mean, I had the same problem. Like, I've interviewed for a couple of NBA teams and teams that I, you know, all right, I just gave your offseason a negative grade. Hey, you what? it never came up, but who knows? I mean, you know, a couple of them never got back to me. Maybe that was the reason.
Maybe they saw it. Like, this guy Nate just said we got an F and we suck. So maybe that's like, yeah, we're not giving this guy a job.
I would be a little more equivocal than that. At least when like they do dumb shit, I try to at least like lay out the reason of like, all right, here's what I think they were thinking, and like, all right, I disagree with it, but I'm at least like try to like talk to people in that organization. Should be like, all right, you know, like I want to present your side of it at least.
Like Avery Bradley, you know why they traded Avery Bradley.
Oh yeah, all right. So this is what their rationale is. You tell me whether you think this is a good reason or not. Number one, this is mostly me surmising, but some conversations you like. Number one, he was gonna want like a massive contract after next year, and he was just gonna be an unrestricted free agent, right? I mean, so, and then they had to trade basically one of Crowder, Smart, and Bradley, and Smart will be restricted next year so they could keep him. So he's the biggest flight risk, number one. Number two, he was loving like basically being the second option, and so he wasn't as cool with Hayward coming in, especially in a contract year when it's like, you know, he's not gonna be able to score as much now. And you know, obviously they needed to move the salary too. So like out of those three guys, what do you think of that? And you know, Marcus Morris is under contract. He's a good player. He's under contract for 2 more. He's not as good as Avery, but you know, at least you could get something when you had to make a move. And you know, they could probably trade Marcus Morris too for something else. Like they got a lot of wing players. So does that explanation hold any water for you?
I thought about it too, like more of the money wise, but I think it's definitely better that way. And are they going to keep Crowder? Do they have enough money to keep Crowder?
He's under contract for 3 more years still. He's only making like $7 million. So they'll be fine with that.
They got him for real cheap.
No, that's like one of the best contracts in the NBA for anyone who's not a superstar.
Yeah, exactly. And did you see the whole quote about what's the guy from Toronto that got traded saying they didn't pass?
Oh, Damari Carroll.
Yeah, Damari Carroll. And what team did he go to?
They salary dumped him basically to the Nets for your boy Justin Hamilton, who then got waived and will now be playing with you.
Hey, what's McCarroll's contract?
He's making like $15 million the next 2 years.
He's making $15 million the next 2 years.
They sign him to like 4 years, 60 in the summer of 2015.
Wow, man, that's love.
Well, I mean, he was good back then. Like, if he were, I think like his knee being fucked up has like kind of been the problem.
Yeah, that hurt them too. And can the Rockets afford Melo if he goes there?
I don't think, like someone asked me about this the other day. I don't think so, because he, they basically have to trade Ryan Anderson to make the math work. Mm-hmm. And well, so let me ask you this. All right. So let's say they have to give up 2 first-round picks to get off of Anderson's money. He's making $20 million the next 3 years, right? Would you trade 2 first-round picks to get Melo at this point in his career with all the other guys they have?
No.
Yeah. So that's why it's difficult, right? They got to get someone to take Anderson, and they have to give up some assets to get him to take him. And then the Knicks probably wants to get something back too. So it's like at some point it's like, all right, Melo isn't worth all this.
Exactly. And Portland has what, the highest cap?
Yeah. Portland's like pretty close. The Warriors and Cavs, I think, are over now, but Portland is like pretty deep in the tax. They're like $20 million over the luxury tax right now or something.
That's crazy.
That's like, yeah, it was, well, that was one of the, not that that I interviewed with them, but they're one of the off seasons we were not as high on last year. What were we talking about before that? Actually, I can't remember what it was that I wanted. There's one other thing I wanted to ask you, but I can't remember right now. Cause you wanted to just start killing the Magic. Why'd you start killing the Magic? Oh yeah. Cause you're like, all right, I'm gonna pay, can get more money. You would give up money to go to a better team.
Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah, so this is what it was. We were talking about a couple of people who, you know, could go over to the NBA, and you're like, well, you know, he might struggle in the NBA because he's not really an NBA guy from a locker room standpoint. Like, what does that mean?
You have a quiet personality. You can be in a situation where you don't talk to your teammates. Okay, there's a lot of individuals, but there's times where you see them all taking pictures, you see them tie them all dressing fashionably, and you see them all goofing and making jokes and stuff like that. They have a lot of fun. But there's players in Europe that don't really have much fun, and they're the guy on their team. They're the guy in the locker room. They're the leader in the locker room. And in the NBA, that's just not happening. There's some times where I see coaches, some of my coaches say they want to coach the NBA, and I'm thinking, like, the way you talk to us, you talk to Carmelo like that, or Kenyon Martin, you might get mushed in your face and saying, get the fuck out of here. Who are you talking to? So
yeah, it was actually Dean Demopoulos did a segment for us at Sports Business Classroom. One of the things that he was saying was when he was in college, like the players were looking up at me. And then when I was in the NBA, like the players were looking down at me. And like, that's the challenge that he wanted. He wanted the challenge of like trying to get people who are going to look down at you. Like that's their default of like, all right, to really like buy in. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like a lot of European coaches necessarily have that approach because they feel like the club has the power like most of the time.
That's European in general. It's the club and the coaches that they're their first priority, and they let it be known. In the NBA, you know, it's a players' league, and if you see something that Carmelo doesn't like or LeBron doesn't like, you're out of there. You see David Blatt, he's an excellent coach.
Yeah. All right. Well, you mentioned your Twitter, by the way. We need to get you some more Twitter followers. I was appalled you only had like 5,000 followers. Like,
yeah, man, I'm not that. But the people that follow me, it's all about quantity, not quality. I got some good followers, and I follow good people, and it's a good group. But yes, yeah. I'll take more followers.
No, you got to start getting those sponsored tweets out there. Like, brand a little bit.
Man, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you actually, if you're gonna be in China, what is it like Weibo now? You have to get like some followers on Weibo, isn't that like the Chinese Twitter?
Yeah, exactly. I just talked to the CEO of the team, and I'm gonna go meet him in San Francisco for a couple of days, and we're just gonna work on all that to get ready to build our brand. You know, I'm gonna end up being a real asshole and just put myself all over the billboards.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on. I included Aaron's Twitter handle in the show notes if y'all want to follow him. And we'll definitely have to have you back on soon. This was tremendous fun.
Yeah, you guys follow me. I'll follow back. And I'm sure I'm going to give you guys a lot of things to laugh about or to even think about. And sometimes I even say sources says that someone's going here. My agent tells me things and I leak it. So it's between me and you guys.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I would say you're like, your Twitter feed I would describe it as like a more profane Andre Iguodala. Kind of like, and maybe a little bit less cryptic because he loves like doing that shit, but like
actually in the summer I'm drinking too much and having too much fun to use my Twitter as much, but once it comes to September to March, it's shots fired everywhere.
All right, man. We'll have you on again soon. This is great. All right. Catch you again.
I appreciate you for having me.
Before we move on, this is from our friends at 5-4 Club. I have always loved going to the store to shop for clothes. If you want to avoid getting something at full price, now you've got to go to that sale rack. You know, the sale rack that has a bunch of different mismatched stuff on it. Maybe if you're lucky, it's organized by size. And you just have to go through by every single item because, of course, they're like jammed together on this rack. You can't even see them until you like look at each individual piece. You might get a couple of deals, but you just spent 3 hours. 5-4 Club is taking that pain point away. Each month, they send you a curated box of 2 to 3 items that are handpicked to match the current season and your style. You can fill out a profile when you start with them. It'll give you the option of going for a more classic style all the way up to something that's a little bit more contemporary or zany. They know what they're doing, so if you don't, that's okay. They will help you build your wardrobe 1 month at a time. You get $120 worth of clothes for just $60 a month, and you can pause or cancel anytime with no commitments. Another advantage with them, you can receive up to 50% off items in their online shop, and you can access exclusive members-only items, free shipping, and size exchanges in addition to what they're sending you every month. So if you want to get started with them, go to 5-4club.com. You actually spell out the numbers, FIVEFOUR club.com right now. Enter that promo code CAPSPACE and they'll give you 50% off your first month's package, plus a free pair of sunglasses as well. That's 50% off your first package at 5-4 Club using that familiar promo code CAPSPACE, which we talk about all the time, of course, on the program. Just go take a look at some of the clothing that they have. If it's the type of stuff that you like, that's a great reason to give them a shot and save yourself a ton of time and a ton of money by getting items at 50% off or more. Once again, that's 54club.com, promo code CAPSPACE. All right, now we're going to get to a little bit more of our Summer League prospect review. Had to break off from that to record with Aaron, but we're going to at least get to the Clippers, Lakers, and Memphis. The Lakers, obviously, probably more interest in them than any other Summer League team, of course. But now that we've teased that, let's start with the LA Clippers. One thing I wanted to note before we started, KP actually updated his research on the predictive power of Summer League stats, and he found generally that rebounding, assists, and block rates translate pretty well. Steals, turnovers, and shooting percentage don't have as much predictive power. So we're going to try to, as I think we generally have done so far, keep that in mind. You know, if a guy was just red hot from three and wasn't doing much else, you know, take that with a grain of salt. If he's rebounding, blocking shots, distributing, maybe it's something you can give some more credit to.
Congratulations, Jack Cooley. But so, yeah, the Clippers are a team kind of in flux. And I think we noticed that with Summer League because they have some second rounders and then some kind of players on the fringes that were fascinating here. And I thought the most interesting was one of their second rounders, Sindarius Thornwell, who I'm not completely sure he's ready to be a rotation player yet, but I still saw a lot to like.
Yeah, he was a guy that coaches really like his mentality. Their coaches were happy with his defense as well in that first game that they played against the Lakers when they were getting lit up. He asked to be put on Brandon Ingram and did a better job than some of the people they had on him previously. Offensively, he was very much a mixed bag. He got to the foul line for 32 attempts in four games. He's very aggressive attacking the rim, particularly, but not really in pick and roll. It's really more transition, closeouts. If he can get just a small seam in the defense, receive the ball with the defense a little bit unsettled, whether it's transition or off of some action on the other side of the floor, they swing it to him. He can get to the rim really well, and he was able to draw contact in those situations. But in some ways, though, he fits the profile of guys that we've seen be successful college scorers, not score as well in the NBA, where it's like a guy who kind of uses his big body, is intense, aggressive, goes through guys, but maybe doesn't have the athleticism to score in that same sort of fashion in the NBA.
And fortunately, I would, from my read on the situation, the Clippers can afford to be patient with him. It's not like they made this huge investment in Thornwell, so they have to throw him into the fire right away. But they can give him a year, see how it works out, and if he can develop a little more aptitude at making those situations. I don't think he's going to get to the foul line 32 times every four games in the NBA, or even if you scale that on minutes, just when you get into the better competition and the increase in quality of big men and rim protection is very important, especially as guys get older and figure out what they're doing. But it was nice to see some signs. I believe he's kind of an older rookie, so that doesn't work necessarily in his favor, but I didn't sit there and think like, oh, he's so much older than everyone else.
Yeah, his shooting, he was 15 of 39 from the field, only 2 of 13 on threes. The three ball did not look good for him, especially if he didn't have his feet perfectly set. He actually had some really bad misses. Again, only 13 attempts, and he did shoot 58 for 148 in college from three last season. So maybe he can get there. There's nothing really looking broken about his shot. Didn't have a ton of mid-range to his game, but he's strong enough that I think he could be a solid defensive player and has quick feet, is intense. So I think he's someone who could maybe get into a rotation at some point in his career. And considering that he was drafted in the second round, you have to feel good about that as the Clippers. Let's get to Bryce Johnson now. What did you see from him?
I still don't love him. I think that he's kind of a guy without a place in the current NBA.
I don't love
him defensively really at either big man spot, and he doesn't bring enough offensively to put him on the floor in those kinds of circumstances. So he'll either have to get a lot better from a skill perspective to take advantage offensively, get a little bit more mobile so he can switch more, or play in a league that is more aligned where he has more advantages to use than the NBA.
Much of his success, he only played three games, was based on doing pretty well in the post. He shot 57% from the field, and he's able to elevate over guys in the post. He can go to a turnaround over his right shoulder, and he was able to create space kind of by like taking an extra step to the side as he would turn and face either for a hook shot or for a turnaround, and still didn't get to the foul line a ton. And that's something, if you're going to be a post-up guy, you really got to have that power move in your arsenal. Even if you have, even if he has a smaller guy on him, he wants to shoot, you know, a shot from 10 feet away or 8 feet away. You know, he's not getting to the rim and getting fouled. And the bigger issue, of course, is just that if posting up is his best skill, it's unlikely that he's ever going to really be asked to do that against real NBA defenders. So he's got to have something else. I think his jumper looked better. I think he only took one three-pointer, but I think I could see him getting out to three eventually. I think that they see him really as more of a four than a five, and that's probably the case. He showed a little bit in his ability to switch at times against, you know, again, this is summer league. Can he do that against real NBA caliber offensive players? Maybe not, but there's, I mean, he definitely had about as good of a summer league as you could have hoped that he would. He didn't do much defensively, like blocking shots or anything. You know, if he were like a guy, I think of it as kind of like a backup Dallas five, you know, maybe he could be kind of similar to like a Dwight Powell. Like maybe that's where he can find some success, but he's still, I think, sees himself as an offensive player. That's very much in his demeanor. And while he can hit some jumpers and finish around the rim, he wants to post up a ton, and that's just, it's not going to happen for him in the NBA unless he gets a lot better, and that's not something that we see from most guys. Did you see much of Juwan Evans?
I did. I liked him. I see him more as a kind of a backup third point guard at this point, probably forever, just because to starters, especially now in the NBA, just have to pop so much more than he did. But he seems like a capable player, a good head on his shoulders, you know, works reasonably well on defense, which you always hope for in a rookie summer league. But his shooting wasn't really there in terms of, like, basically one of the big elements at this point in the NBA is a point guard who can shoot kind of off the dribble in the pick and roll. And I didn't see much of that from him, but the other tools are there where if you put him on the floor, either in the G League or as kind of like a stopgap in the NBA, that he'll end up doing a decent enough job.
Yeah, I think I was pleased with what he was able to do in pick and roll. I thought that he had 21 assists in 87 minutes. That's really good for summer league. He gets on the defensive glass as well. He does have physical limitations, only 5'11". 6'5 wingspan helps a little bit, but a 7'11 standing reach, I mean, that's one of the absolute lowest in the NBA at this point. And he definitely looks like a small guy out there. He likes to get all the way to the rim for his size. Pretty good finisher. I mean, doesn't have the creativity of like an Isaiah Thomas type, because basically no one has that. And he doesn't even have, you know, that type of strength or bounce either. I mean, Isaiah is a unique player, but he can get to the rim. He's got a nice floater game, which I liked, and he can make the passes. He's not really comfortable taking the NBA three off the dribble yet. I think maybe he can get there, but he's not quite at that point yet. But another guy who I think showed everything you really would like to see from him, except for maybe a little more shooting ability. So he had a nice summer league to me. I don't expect him to contribute this year, but maybe he's someone who could turn into a backup point guard down the road.
And the Clippers are going to need players like that. They're going to need to hit. It's part of why their depth has been so shaky the last couple of years, is that if they can hit on one or two late first, early second round picks, they'll be so much better for it, because those are a low cost base, even though they're not going to have cap space in the near future anyway.
Yeah, and I also just liked his moves off the dribble too. Like if he had the ability to attack and transition, get guys on their heels with in and outs and either go to a floater or get to the rim or force help. So I liked his game there. Montrezl Harrell recently traded to them, only played one game. He just completely dominated it. Like the guys that the Bucks, Thon didn't play in that game. He was going up against like DJ Wilson and some other non-roster guys for the Bucks, and they were just not tough enough to handle him. He was just ducking in, getting whatever he wanted on the offensive glass. I mean, he's a good enough player that we don't need to see him in summer league. He's got a record at the NBA level, but he looked really good in the one game that I think he probably just really wanted to play in, and so they let him.
You ready to move on to the Lakers?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start with the main event, Lonzo Ball.
To me, Lonzo, while he sparkled a lot of the time, I think that he gave ammunition to the people who are his big supporters and his big detractors, especially early on, because he is a culture changer in terms of his passing. Like, it is special, and you saw the way the Lakers ran the floor when he was playing and when he was sitting. I thought that difference was startling, and that's just the part of what he brings. But then the big question is, A, his defense is going to be a big problem early on especially, but who knows, moving forward. And also just, can teams, when they get to the scouting report with him, make it harder for him to be a scorer as a shooter?
Yeah, it really was. Well, so let me ask you this. Was he better or worse than you expected just overall?
His scoring was a little better than I expected, but almost everything else is pretty much the same. I mean, I've watched so much of Lonzo Ball that I didn't expect to be surprised, and I wasn't.
Well, the good news is at least at this level, we'll see in the NBA, but I suspect it will. The passing translated, the field translated, the things that make him special were on display. I think he will already be a top five passer in the league the moment he steps onto an NBA floor. Some of the passes that he threw, I mean, just these like bombs, 70-foot bombs, outlets, hit-ahead passes. I mean, he just throws a beautiful two-hand fundamental chest pass that's got a lot of snap to it that just gets there. In pick and roll, even, and he improved at this throughout the week, he was able to get around the screen, and even if he's not necessarily a threat to pull up in mid-range, he's able to just activate the big, go in to him just enough to make him think, all right, I gotta guard this guy or he's gonna go right in for a layup, and then throw it out and find shooters. His ability to make passes on the move, his entry passes are unbelievable. Oh,
his entry passes were amazing.
Like Zubac, Thomas Bryant, like just, I mean, Zubac has soft hands. Like there was one play where Lonzo just was kind of like trapped in the corner, had nowhere to go, and just threw this pass over like three sets of arms to just find Zubac rolling after he got trapped on the pick and roll, and Zubac just did like a beautiful little layup. I mean, it was just like, you know, a 3-foot window he could have gotten the pass in. It just lobbed it up. Incredible. I mean, it's all the stuff that he was doing is really, well, really outstanding.
And as you know, I'm an enthusiast for guys that have a good instinct for velocity on passes. And Lonzo, velocity and angles are both incredible. So he throws hard passes when he needs to. He throws soft passes when he needs to. And it's at exactly the right line so that it will be a catchable ball and be hard for other guys to get. And that's something actually that I think he's better at than Ben Simmons, who I really like as a passer, partially due to his height. But Lonzo has a greater arsenal and a greater judgment for what to use when. And that's no knocking Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is awesome. Like, I had him number one last year for a reason. But Lonzo is special in all of those ways.
Yeah, and for Lonzo, I thought that at times he showed more in pick and roll, more in ISO situations getting to the rim. That first game against the Clippers when he shot 2 of 15, pretty ugly. But because he really like wasn't even breaking the paint at all, much less getting in the rim and scoring. He did have that one crazy 36-point game where he hit a few shots. He even was only still 3 out of 10 in that game. He really got to the foul line a lot, got some layups. I thought he did at least try to shoot a few mid-rangers. That had been a criticism. We saw that from him. It didn't necessarily go in that much. I think his ability to get to the rim and finish, he's kind of a one-trick pony in that regard, where he's going to go up soft every time. He's not going to go into guys and get fouled. Hopefully that's something that with his intelligence, he can add to his game. A lot of times too, he just got his shot blocked in really ugly fashion. I mean, basically his only approach here is to try to shoot a speed layup with one hand without putting his other hand on the ball, or maybe he'll like try to do a quick double pump into a finger roll, but there's no powerful finishes. Everything is kind of a finger roll. It's a soft layup, and that's how you don't get to the foul line. And there are probably 3 or 4 times where just he tried one of those, he thought he was by the guy, and no, he's got to learn that he was not by the guy. Even sometimes it was like the on-ball guy, another guard getting him on those plays. The jump shot definitely was a struggle for him. 3 of 25 on jump shots off the dribble in the half court, and then 4 of 14 on catch and shoots, just not a ton better. And also in the pick and roll, just generally when he was trying to shoot out of the pick and roll, 7 out of 33. But I mean, his transition work was great. What he was able to do for everyone else, I mean, this Lakers team was just scoring a crap ton of points, especially at the end of the tournament, and they're putting up like .110, .115 in like a 40-minute game. So he was really having a huge effect. One thing that I saw though watching him, he just looked kind of soft to me, just like in terms of like his physical, he just doesn't deal with contact, doesn't invite contact, doesn't try to use his strength. You know, he'll back down from guys, I think. Do you see that from him as well?
I do. And then you also think about that the way that he defends. So he doesn't really battle through screens particularly well, but he does get blocks. But you think usually guys who get blocks, they're more physical, but most of his blocks are kind of like length and finesse catching up to a guy or surprising him.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things, not just like annihilating or swallowing somebody up. That's just not the way he does things.
But enough about Ball. How about the future greatest player in LA Lakers history, Kyle Kuzma?
So Kuzma, it was funny because I was sitting next to Pelton for a lot of the Lakers games, which was a lot of fun. The thing that was most intriguing to me about him was not that the fact that he made 48% of his threes, which is ridiculous. It's yeah, that
and not only that, but he got up 50 attempts.
And that's exactly where right? I was going because that's sorry, so fundamentally different. No, that's exactly where I was going with it, is that the willingness to shoot them is not something that I wasn't super familiar with him. He went to Utah. I didn't watch a ton of Utah this year. And so I just didn't think he was going to do that. I didn't think he had it in him. And that would help the Lakers, you know, just being willing to shoot that. I mean, basically, if you're playing in forward spots now, you have to be in that mold unless you're just super special defensively. And he was comfortable. I thought that he had a little bit more off the bounce than I expected. Like just, you know, when somebody came after him, especially once he started shooting and started making them, then he was able to attack that. It's kind of the same thing that Aaron Gordon's always needed to do. And I thought, you know, Kuzma is obviously nowhere near the player that Gordon is overall, but that part of his game was way better than I expected.
For me, it was really about some of the flashes that he'd shown in college, because he really didn't even shoot many threes until I think this last year, which was his junior year, as I recall. And to get up this number of times, he's helped by Lonzo there. He's helped by getting out in transition. So there flashes of that were good. Obviously, he's not going to continue to shoot 48% on three-pointers, but he looked very comfortable taking difficult shots, had some versatility to his jumper. But then, yeah, the flashes as well off the dribble. I thought the 19 assists that he had was very, very encouraging, and that, you know, just driving kick type of plays, he was able to punish closeouts when guys started really going after that jumper to run him off the line. Defensively, though, I thought he could have been better. That's really, to me, is going to be the big problem for him, is like, can he defend stretch fours? He doesn't really block shots that much. He's got some athleticism, but he doesn't really have a great defensive mentality. How tough is he? Like, those are the things that, like, if he can be this type of offensive player and give you something defensively, now you've really got something, right? But if he's going to just be a sieve on defense, and I mean, we're talking a couple years down the road, because as a rookie, he's just going to suck. We know that. But I think that then they can really have found something. But I mean, for the 27th pick to go out averaging 20 a game and be this efficient, I mean, they got to be really happy with it.
They do. And that was encouraging also, because we just didn't get to see that much from Josh Hart due to an injury. And he was a guy who could have shined in summer league, but we didn't get the opportunity. I broadly like Thomas Bryant more than I expected. He was a player who I was more familiar with in person because we saw him at Adidas Nations last year. He was one of the college guys that came, and so they were on the other courts, and he didn't impress me that much in that setting. But here, I think some of it was also just playing with Lonzo and running harder down the floor. He looked better. He looked more capable.
Yeah, he looked good in that first game against the Clippers. I didn't see much from him in the other Lakers games that I watched. He did hit an NBA three, but he'll run the floor hard. He likes to hit the offensive glass. Defensively, there are certainly question marks in terms of his lateral mobility, ability to protect the rim. You know, I mean, if you're going to play a traditional center like that, having someone who doesn't protect the rim a lot, it makes it a lot more difficult. So I didn't really see a ton that changed my opinion about him either way here. So I think we could move on to Brandon Ingram, who only played one game before they sat him out with cramps. I rewatched the film of that game before we came on, because I remember being very impressed seeing it in person. I was not as impressed actually watching the film. He wasn't creating as much separation as I thought he was. And he also just had like a ton of missed shots that you sort of edit out of your brain maybe more when you're watching him live. And then you're like,
something,
oh yeah,
we also
did
with Donovan Mitchell.
Yes. Yes. I think that's right.
But yeah, I mean, Ingram at a basic level, he just kind of popped in that setting. He was one of those guys who in the first quarter of his first game, he just looked too good for summer league. And he looks more capable to me with the ball in his hands. And that was not a weakness of his last year, but I think that he looked more comfortable. His jump shot looked better, but not all the way there. You know, like, it's going to need to be pretty strong for him. And
yeah, I mean, you can't really learn anything about that based on one game.
I don't remember watching his warmups too intently either. So, and that was the first day of Vegas Summer League. So I think that he looked good, but with him, we're going to need to see it in actuality, because with with the way that this looks like it's shaking out for the Lakers, he might end up being a key piece of their future. Like, he's one of those, especially now that they traded Russell to get out of Mozgov's contract. Like, he is really kind of the swing piece right now in terms of whether he is a starting member of whatever the next great Lakers team is, or whether he's kind of more of an ancillary piece. And we'll have to find that out.
Yeah, I still think that he's just not that great of an athlete. I mean, he's got great length, so he's able to make plays, but he doesn't really blow by guys. One thing he has gotten a lot better at is using his body. He's gotten stronger. He's able to create space, go through guys the way you need to do in the NBA. So he's got that going for him. He's started to show some facility as well, using his length to kind of finish at odd angles under the rim. That's something that I think he's going to need because, again, he's not blowing by his guy. But to me, offensively, his fortunes are going to rise and fall with the jump shot, and we don't know enough about that yet. That obviously was a major issue for him in his first year. And then defensively, I don't really recall him doing a ton. I mean, whether he's going to be this great stopper defensively, we haven't seen that type of ability from him yet. Again, because, you know, he's not like the greatest quick twitch athlete in the world, at least in this point of his career. But for one game, I mean, you have to be happy with what he did, at least. What'd you think of Ivica Zubac?
I worry about what he'll be as an NBA player, just because. I don't think his defense, when I watch him, he wasn't impacting the game nearly enough on that end to see him playing regular, like more than fringe rotation minutes on a good team. That can get better. He's still young, but at this point, especially a team with expectations, I think that's more important. So if that's the case, or even temporarily, permanently, you have to be a really effective offensive player. Like, that's the only way you can get on the court. Think about Enes. I don't think he'll be as bad defensively as Enes Kanter, but you could think about Kanter as a good example here. Like, he's so great offensively that he still provides value. And Zubac is not nearly at that level offensively yet. There's a lot that I like with him. As you said, his hands are good. His touch inside, I think it's kind of inside like 8 feet or so. I like it. His jumper can be a little bit hit or miss, but there's a lot to like. He's just going to have to tighten it up to be a part of a team with expectations. The Lakers aren't there yet, but they want to be there in a year or two.
Yeah, he may not play that much this year. Maybe he will, but I thought it was very telling. Like, he wasn't even closing games in summer league. He would like barely play in the fourth quarter in most of these games. Like, they would go with like Kuzma at center and go like super small, even when Ingram wasn't playing. And that just shows you, number one, that he wasn't like unbelievable, but number two, it's just so hard to be a player of his type and be on the floor at the end of games. I mean, he's just too slow and doesn't quite, to me, have the power game that you really need or the ability to elevate that can make him a great offensive player to make up for some of his defensive limitations.
Yeah, do you want to talk at all about Alex Caruso?
I think we have to, yeah. Not much. He's out of Texas A&M, big combo guard type of guy, but pretty short wingspan, only 6'5 wingspan. He's 6'5. He played actually in the G League last year for the OKC Blue. Shot 40% on threes there. I mean, I thought that maybe he could turn into like a really poor man's Kirk Heinrich someday. Like, maybe he could kind of be like that kind of a player.
Like a steward on offense who can catch and shoot and then defend actively when he's out there.
And he's a smart player. He was one of the guys who was able to play off Alonzo, get some backdoors, get out in transition. He helped that a fair amount. So, I mean, I hadn't heard of him at all. He was awful the first couple games, actually. And then I think he started and scored like 30 points and then played well after that
against the Kings. The Lakers had a series of the most entertaining games of summer league, but that one, the Lakers sat all their best guys against the Kings, and so it was this big disappointment. And then their backups ended up beating a Kings team that played I think 4 or 5 roster guys, and that was, might have even been 6, and that was interesting in that way. Caruso led the way, and I don't think he's going to score that way in the NBA, but you know, I think he's a good value on a reasonable gamble on a two-way contract. I think that's better than giving him a full NBA spot at this point, just because he's going to need to prove it against a very different type of competition. But on a two-way contract, fine.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he showed some potential. I mean, I think it's really his defense is going to be what'll keep him around. Josh Hart, you mentioned, didn't do much in the couple of games he played before an ankle injury, so I don't really have much to say about him. Let's get to the Memphis Grizzlies now. They played very well in summer league. Start with Wade Baldwin. How much did you see of him, and what were your thoughts?
Not a ton. I watched the Grizzlies a couple times. They're one of these kind of weird summer league teams that happen sometimes where they're a little bit more experienced than other teams. I thought that Wayne Selden was kind of the other branch of too good for summer league, kind of like Montrezl Harrell, where it's just like he has this figured out too well for summer league rather than he's just like so much better than everyone else. But Baldwin, I don't see how he can be a primary ball handler at the NBA level, at least for a while. Like, that's just not what he can do. Whether he can be off ball and work, you know, maybe. I don't think that's necessarily his offensive skill set either way.
I mean, can you tell me one thing that he's good at right now?
No, I can't.
That's bad. Maybe attacking in transition. Maybe that would be one.
I'd say that's what he's best at, but I wouldn't say that he's like really good at it at this point.
Yeah, his vision is, I would say, subpar for an NBA point guard. He didn't have that many assists, and the ones that he did were very basic. One pass away type of passes to guys that weren't even necessarily that open. He also just had some absolutely horrendous turnovers as well. I did like what I saw from him at times defensively. Like, for example, when they played Portland, he was really getting into Jorge Gutierrez, forced a couple of turnovers from him. So maybe that's where he could start to make a name for himself a little bit. But he's just, and then his shooting, he shot well on threes in college, but he shoots like this set shot that takes him a long time to get off from NBA 3. And he's not really like a nuclear athlete. I would consider him to be like kind of, you know, a solid athlete. He's got solid size. But yeah, I was hoping to see more from him overall. Statistically, he was not efficient. So I definitely would be very surprised if he were a quality player in their rotation this year.
So I kind of alluded to Wayne Selden. I referenced him earlier. And my thought is just that he's kind of at a different place than summer league, and so he looked good, but he's supposed to look good. Do you see it the same way, or is it different for you?
No, I thought this was very encouraging. I mean, supposed to look good. I mean, he's played like one game. Yeah, he did start. It was guarding Kawhi Leonard. I'm sorry, one season. Didn't really play much in summer league last year. I think he was dealing with a knee injury. But I mean, the ball skills that he had working in pick and roll, being able to get to the foul line again, that's a little bit illusory perhaps in summer league, especially for guys, another guy with like a kind of strong body type at the two like him. But I mean, I never would have thought he had the skills to get to a 29% usage rate. He also had 18 assists, I think, in six games. That's for a guy of his ilk, that's pretty good, working off the dribble and pick and roll, able to get to the rim. And then he took 33 three-point attempts in six games as well. Another, you didn't think of him as a quality shooter, and he made 33% of those. They weren't all easy attempts. He had some big scoring games. I mean, I think you had to be pretty impressed with him, because the thought was that he wasn't going to be necessarily this type of player. He's going to be kind of like a strong guy. Maybe he could turn into 3-and-D, and maybe that is more of his ceiling in the real NBA, but I didn't think he even had the capability to score like this in summer league. And so that was a refreshing turn of events for him.
So we could move on to Deontay Davis, who last year was the highest paid second American born second round pick in history, NBA history. And my concern with him, like his physical tools always intrigued me, just because it seemed like he moved well for his size and everything like that. But I don't know what he is as an NBA player, specifically defensively, but just I don't have a sense yet for where he fits into a rotation.
I thought he could be a mobile center. And he had a few moments last year. There was one game at Utah, I thought, where he played pretty well, but obviously didn't play very much. He was held back by the plantar fasciitis and various associated issues there. His mid-range jumper looked good. He was able to, it's a slower release, but he's getting out to long two range. He's comfortable from out there. He's got a nice touch around the rim. He'll get on the offensive glass. My big disappointment with him was he wasn't as explosive as I remembered him being. Like, he was not really getting off the floor. Body wise, he does not look great. He's still not a ton of definition there. And so he's got good length. I think he can be a guy who could be sort of a mobile center on a second unit. But I hope that he was going to be one of these real bouncy guys who could get up like for alley-oops and stuff. But I didn't see that level of explosion from him in summer league. And I remembered him having more of that, seeing him last year, both challenging shots and finishing around the rim.
Yeah. So I think that's a concern. And I also, so like you think about the other guys now that Zebo's gone, that they're going to potentially need to step up in the front court, especially if Brandon Wright is unavailable for moments of time, which he seemingly always is. Jarrell Martin didn't really thrive to me either. And so those are the two guys where you want one of them to really fit into that role, especially if Ivan Rabb, you wouldn't expect a straight rookie to do it. And I didn't really love Jarrell Martin either.
Yeah, Martin, 23 of 61 from the field. He was 0 for 6 on three-pointers. He was playing almost exclusively at the four. The hope for him would be he could have some stretch to him. He could take bigger players off the dribble, finish around the rim. He's got a skill level, compete defensively, move his feet at the four. And while he got some offensive rebounds, he's not a rim protector at all. He only had three blocks playing the four, as I said. So just, I hope for him to find a way to be more efficient. I mean, he's another guy who's really had his career set back by injuries. But this was, I don't want to say it was a disastrous summer league, but you hope that for a guy going into his third year to be a part of a rotation, this is not what you want to see from him.
So yeah, I mean, Memphis, they've had this front court depth as a strength for a long time now. And those were the two guys who seemed like they were most likely to fit in. They could go small a little bit more. If Chandler Parsons is actually able to play, then they'll have enough wing depth that they can do some things differently. And I was also, I don't know, I was more mixed. Like I was, so I say, more down on Deonte Davis and Jarrell Martin. Dylan Brooks showed me a little bit. I think that, you know, the idea of him being this reliable, like I think he was a 40% shooter from three at Oregon last year. I don't think he's necessarily that, but his jump shot's interesting, but also his athleticism is intriguing for a guy who was taken as a second round pick.
Yeah, he's improved his athleticism to be sure. I mean, he's not a nuclear athlete, but he could get up for some dunks. Like he had a nice tip dunk that I was impressed by. Streaky shooter, takes some tough, difficult attempts from downtown, but he had one game where he was just absolutely on fire from three, but then overall was 6 out of 17 on threes. He came off the bench mostly, definitely a really confident player, likes to have the ball in his hands, and the question is how much can he really do that at the NBA level. Probably will get a lot of time in the G League this year. I think he signed a three-year contract, so he'll be around for some time now in Memphis. Got a pretty significant guarantee on that, as I recall. So I mean, I think he showed a little bit, like he's a guy who can, at his size, who has some passing vision, who can set up others, who can score. That is a slightly intriguing package. He's got to get much better defensively. That's going to be a big thing for him as well. But this is, he's a guy who, while he has some tools, the idea of him fitting into an NBA role, if he's not going to be a guy who has the ball in his hands a lot, that's where maybe the questions can arise.
And that's why he's going to have to hit basically all of his jump shots, because if he can do that, then provides more value as in those sorts of situations. And a guy who I thought was going to be more of a factor as a catch and shoot player was Rade Zagoric, who was another, I think he was second rounder this year, right? Last year.
Yeah,
okay.
They traded that Clippers pick to get 31 and 35 last year. Boston has that pick now.
That's right.
It's funny, actually, the last time we talked about this, you had to remind me of that transaction. So now, because you had to remind
turnabout
me,
is fair play.
Head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Only one of us can remember it at one time.
It's a very unusual quirk. But so Zagoric I think he got a full guarantee for this year, got kind of one of those contracts for second rounders where it, you know, has runs for a longer time, and in exchange for that got a guarantee for this first year. And I thought he was going to be more aggressive at taking shots when they presented themselves. He didn't necessarily look bad, but that was sort of the thing that I thought he was going to hang his hat on. And he only attempted, what was it, like 13, 14 threes?
Yeah, and just generally, they had a lot of ball dominant guards on this team with Baldwin, Seldon, Brooks. So he was going to be, Jarrell Martin took a lot of shots, created a lot of offense. So he was going to be in line behind those guys. Didn't do a ton. I'd like to see him work on his body. He's not a guy who has much in the way of muscle definition at this point. His three-pointer is not like an incredibly quick release. He can get up, get to the basket off of one foot. I did like just defensively that he seemed to be around the ball a lot and just to show up in places when there was a loose ball or to interrupt the play. But, you know, that was just a small feeling, a handful of plays that you saw that on. But he seemed to have a nice intelligence to his game. Again, not a guy you're going to expect to see contributing much this season. But he's got some tools at 6'9", so I'm not as bothered by the fact that he didn't have like some great stat line and didn't shoot a ton this year, given where he was on this team.
And also, he's 21, he'll turn 22 later this summer, so you're not sitting there saying, oh, he needs to kill it in this. It's okay for it to take some time.
All right, that'll do it for today. Thanks to my guest, Aaron Jackson. Having him on was a lot of fun. You can follow him on Twitter as well. That's in the show notes. And thanks to Danny for coming on. Also, anything you wanted to talk about before we depart here, Danny?
Yeah, the Real Jam Radio episode on... So I did Tears with Adi Joseph, who's now For the Win. He used to be my editor at the Sporting News. We did the Western Conference, and we went over an hour on that. So I decided to make that a standalone episode for Real Jam Radio. That'll be out Sunday night, Monday morning, so by the time most people listen to this.
All right, and don't forget, we're going to be doing a Patreon mailbag as well later this week, so if you are a subscriber, you can get your questions in there. Not sure exactly when that's coming. We got to still finish up with Summer League here. It's obviously very film intensive, so once we get that finish up with the Summer League podcast, then we'll move to the mailbag. And also, if you've been enjoying the show, a review on iTunes would be very much appreciated as well. Talk to you all next time.